Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, September 1st, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the internet at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using for a little over 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. You click the link and download it. Print it off, copy it as often as you like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We are hopeful that people will do all of those things soon and often, primarily because it's been our experience that when people use these tools, it improves their life quality and relationship quality. Secondarily, because it tends to promote comments, questions, answers, or testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, please do so. You can either email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeanie@whyagain.org. Alternatively, if you're on the show live, if you can listen in while we're live, you can call 563-999-3581. And when you do that and press 1 on your phone, it puts a little icon of a hand by your phone number. And I can see that and turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. And we can have a conversation. And that is great benefit to us whenever people choose to do that, because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. And the intention with this work is to be of service. So please let us know, how can we be of service to you? What's on your mind? How is what we've been doing showing up for you? How is it stimulating positive change in your life? Or lots of comments or questions that we might entertain with you and discuss with you. primary thing we've been doing on the show this year since January 10th is reading through the Way of Mastery and going very slowly and reading through it with commentary in an effort to discern what are the tools that this set of teachings offers and how can we maximize the, number one, our ability to access them, and number two, the positive benefits they have to offer. And yesterday we were just beginning to read into lesson 20. And I had somebody else tell me that the show from the 30th, which was the day before yesterday, was worthy of being a highlight show because in that show I just kind of stumbled into doing an overview of the first 19 lessons. And so there's nothing of great detail in there, but it does skip through lesson 1 through lesson 19, hitting some key highlights. And yesterday we started reading, we read the first 3 pages of lesson 20. And lesson 20 is titled Vigilance for the Kingdom. And lesson 20 just wants to take the primary message from the very first lesson and the first axiom in this work, which is stated as nothing you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. So it takes that and basically puts it on steroids and says, what you desire, you experience. And so clearly they're not talking about just the conscious logical level. They're talking about a deeper soul level. They're talking about conscious awareness. They're talking about history of you as an independent consciousness, and they're talking about deep spiritual truths. The second section of this lesson is titled The Decision to Accept the Truth That is True Always. The trick is, if I'm going to accept the truth that is true always, I have to find a way to withdraw some, if not most, or all of the value that I have placed on the rat race, on the stuff, on the finances, on the drama in relationship. I had somebody in my office earlier today was talking about leaving kickboxing facility that she and her family had gone to and had thoroughly enjoyed, but decided to leave because somebody came in and started drama. He said, she said, this person has that sexual orientation, this person shops at the wrong store, this person's got the wrong skin color, this person doesn't believe in the right God, whatever it is, whatever the drama and trauma was. Here was a 5 or 6 week experience that this woman and several of her family members were engaged in, and they really liked it. They liked the diet information they were given and the lifestyle change and the activity and the family activity, and they walked away from it because of the drama, because somebody decided to come in and say, wait, I'm going to do gossip. And they simply withdrew their attention and their value from that which was going to be a distraction to what they really valued. And what they valued was peaceful family interaction and some good physical activity and some good nutritional value, and they weren't going to get distracted from that by the drama and trauma. Well, if you're going to follow what the Way of Mastery is suggesting, if you're going to engage in this work without being constantly bombarded from your own negative thoughts and your own ego telling you that's wrong, that's bad, how could everything be neutral, etc., how could love heal all things, if you're going to get into this and move through it, you're going to have to withdraw a significant amount, if not most or all, of the value you place on what your family and your culture and your language and your religion has told you is so important in this world. I just flashed on things like Dr. Phil. Dr. Phil was a psychologist. It was a rural kind of country boy, down to earth, very intelligent, you know, well read in the field of psychology, and then he got somehow connected with Oprah Winfrey, and the next thing you know, he's got his own television show, and he was very popular. And at the time, I was, you know, the bald-headed male figure, white-skinned, bald-headed male figure in my practice, and all of a sudden, here's this Dr. Phil, white-skinned, bald-headed psychologist on TV, and people loved him, and I had patients who came and told me, God, I feel so lucky. I feel like I've got my own Dr. Phil. And what happened was what usually happens when money and producers and ratings get involved. The core of the work, the essence, the respect, the boundaries, whatever you want to call it, got left behind in pursuit of how can we put on a good show that people are going to want to watch. And to a person, everyone who had ever said to me, oh, I feel so lucky, I feel like I've got my own Dr. Phil, they ended up coming back to me and saying, boy, am I glad you're not Dr. Phil. And it's not because I changed so much or that he changed so much as a person. It's because what they were doing was all about the surface stuff and what will get ratings and what's exciting. This book, these teachings are not about the surface stuff. It's not about what's going to get glitz and glamour and ratings and stimulation. This is about settling down and accepting the truth that is true always. What is that? You and your Creator are one. You've never been separate from your Creator. Your essence was never designed to make enough money in any kind of social setting to get a certain kind of car and a certain kind of house. That's not your essence. That's part of the dream. That's part of a value system that was created in this culture, in this family, and it's never quite been this way before in human history. And it'll never quite be this way again. What we value, what we're told to value, has changed dramatically over the years. But the process is the same, because it's all the stuff outside of you that has the value. It's all your status in the culture or the family or the community that has value. And this work is the internal work. This work is about recognizing that the truth is true always. You've never been disconnected from your source. Your value is whole and complete just as you are. Nothing of value can be taken from you. Nothing of actual value can be added unto you. So I understand that at different levels of scale, it's important. Guy Finley would often interrupt his talks and say, listen, I'm not saying don't be a good householder. Be a good householder. Take care of your body physically. Make sure that you don't waste your money on frivolous things so you can afford the rent and the utilities and so you can keep yourself safe and in a clean living environment. Do that. But Guy Finley says, but first, the first excellence is this awareness of the instant constant connection to your source, to these higher wisdoms, to this loving, integrative flow of life energy. This book has said the only relationship in your life that has any value is your relationship with your Creator. And it doesn't mean that there is no value in any other relationship. It just means that unless your relationship with your source, with the energies that created you, that keep your heart beating and your breath moving, unless that relationship is solid for you, unless you work to keep it conscious and as a top priority, you won't do well with anything of substance in any of your other relationships. So the text in the second section of Lesson 20 reads, "The way of transformation," and then it says, "Please listen carefully. The way of transformation is not a process of changing the unworthiness in you to the point where finally you're knocking at heaven's door and then you awaken. Rather, the way of transformation rests on your decision to accept the truth that is true always. I and my Creator are one. And now that that is out of the way, how would a Christ live in this dimension? How would a Christ bring himself or herself to each moment of experience? What voice would Christ listen to? What vision would he or she serve? What if I just asked myself that question multiple times a day, that series of two or three questions? How would a Christ live in this dimension? What would a Christ bring him or herself to experience in each moment? What voice would Christ listen to? What vision would he or she serve? The text goes on and says, the struggle to awaken, just this is critical, the struggle to awaken is the very obstacle to its accomplishment. Well, there's your koan for the day. What's a koan? A koan is a phrase or a statement or a couple statements that seem to contradict themselves. Here's a koan for you. No ignorance, no end to ignorance. Here's another koan. Do nothing, and nothing is left undone. Here's another koan. The struggle to awaken is the very obstacle to its accomplishment. Well, how could that be? How can I achieve awakening if I don't struggle to awaken? How could my desire and efforts to awaken be the obstacle to me awakening? That's a koan. Sit with that for a while. It's a deep spiritual truth. I've heard it several times, various mildly different statements with Guy Finley. He says, your desire to achieve or acquire anything is the obstacle to acquiring it in the spiritual realm. Because essentially what it means is you start from a false premise. You start from the premise that you need something. And the essence of this deep spiritual work is you are already whole and complete just as you are. You don't need to do anything to become anything other than your true nature. Nothing of any value can ever be taken from you, so you do not need to defend yourself. We went through this many times over with the Course in Miracles last year, where it talks about in your defenselessness, your true safety lies, in your invulnerability, in your ability to recognize your whole and complete and infinitely safe in each moment, that your essence can't be hurt, chipped, dented, rusted, faded, or broken in any way. So back up in this paragraph, it says, the struggle to awaken is the very obstacle to its accomplishment. That is why the 5 minutes as Christ was given to you as a very simple exercise. They didn't say, spend 5 minutes trying to become Christ. They said, sit in a chair as Christ. Ask, what would Christ want to accomplish in this moment? What would Christ create as an experience in this moment? And if indeed you desire Christ above all things, would you not participate in it each day? Well, clearly, anyone who is not doing an exercise of sitting in a chair as Christ for 5 minutes each day desires something else more than sitting in a chair as Christ for 5 minutes each day. That's just a direct observation. There is no judgment contained in there. It's perfectly okay for you to spend your time in your day any way you'd like. This work offers a meditation into the heart of Christ. This work offers the thought, you are unlimited spirit. This work offers thoughts about how the choice is always yours to choose love or fear. This work offers thoughts about how you may decide to use time more wisely than you have in the past. If you awaken to the different areas in which you've been asleep, or you've been living from the hallucination, or you've been living from the conditioning of your family or culture. And the text right here says, all right, so that is why the 5 minutes as Christ was given to you as a very simple exercise. And if indeed you desire Christ above all things, and we're not saying that you do, but if you do, you would participate in that exercise every day, right? Yes? No? For that which you desire and love is that which pulls your attention to it. If you love Christ, then let Christ pull you, attract you to spending 5 minutes a day in the realization that you can only be what you are created to be. And what this means is it doesn't matter how many years, how many decades, how many traumatic events you've been through where you did not see yourself as the source, as being one with your creator, as being infinitely created to all of connected to all of creation. It doesn't matter how many traumatic events you've been through where you didn't realize that. It doesn't matter how many days, weeks, months, years, or decades you've spent living from the dream of separation or the hallucination or the illusion that you're not good enough. It doesn't matter because you've never been separate from your creator, from the flow of life. And none of the thoughts, none of the hallucinations, none of the behaviors you've done from that has ever chipped, dented, rusted, faded, or broken the essence, the purity of your essence in any way. So if you love Christ, let Christ pull you. Let Christ attract you to spending 5 minutes a day in the realization that you have always been what you were created to be, that you cannot, in actuality, change your true nature. The text goes on and says, having accepted that as the truth, then inquire into your own Christ mind on how you will live this day. For the mind that is awakened sees no distinction anymore between being here and not being here. It sees no distinction between heaven and earth. It sees no distinction between eternity and time. It sees no distinction between the non-material and material or physicality. It sees no distinction between the extraordinary and the ordinary. But rather, reality, we might use the word actuality here, is returned to the mind, and it suffuses what the mind experiences. And the literal world that you thought you used to know, these buildings, cars, governments, and all the rest, they simply become a temporary, harmless illusion that seems to have, quote, hoodwinked, close quotes, your brothers and sisters, who, by the way, are a part of you. Your brothers and sisters are a part of you. You've never been separate from the rest of creation. You've had a dream of separation. You live in the illusion of separation, and yet you've never been separate. The text goes on and says, because the world is now seen in its transparency, it is no longer fearful to you. When you wake up and see in the middle of the night and you had this traumatic, scary dream, and you wake up and realize you're alone and safe in your own bed, it isn't long before the fear fades. There are very few people who go for hours and hours or days and days having a negative reaction to a traumatic dream or a nightmare they had, because once they awaken, they see the true nature that that was just a dream. Literally, when you choose to value being a Christ above all else, when you choose to awaken to the truth of your nature above all else, when you release your attachment to all of these values you've placed on the physical body and the finances and the status in the culture, you awaken to the truth of who you are. This world that seems so solid is now seen in its transparency, and then it is no longer fearful to you. You're free to walk and abide in it as long as the body lasts, quietly, joyfully, just going about your most extraordinary / ordinary tasks, except that they become translated into the means by which you can demonstrate the love of creation to the world, the truth of the love of creation to the world. The text goes on and says, reactivity, suffering, doubt, depression, in other words, dis-ease, can only be the reflection of a decision to use the power of the mind to desire and therefore perceive and experience that which is unlike the kingdom. All of our suffering, all of our upsets come from a shifting of the focus of our energy away from what is actually true to what we want to be true, to what we desire from the illusion or hallucination. The text goes on and says, freedom, peace, unlimitedness, and above all, fearlessness must necessarily be the result of the decision to use the power of the mind to remember, to realize, and to abide in, and to extend the truth that is true always. Then the passing phenomena called life is simply seen as a delightful dance. It has no purpose in and of itself. I was thinking of this the other day. I was thinking of somebody was telling me about some sprinter who's come back and set records in hurdling, and some sprinter who's come back and set records in sprinting. And I marveled at how I didn't know these names. And it used to be that when I was younger, I would follow this stuff and I'd follow sports more, and I knew who was you know, who's Usain Bolt and who his competition is and all of this, and who the women sprinters and hurdlers were. And well, it just amazed me. In the last 15, 20, 25 years, I've drifted away from that stuff and pulled my attention away from it and directed it in other areas. And I just started having this deeper realization that, oh, my gosh, this has been happening ad infinitum, an infinite number of times. Humans have decided this activity or that activity is so special that we want to refine our ability to do it at higher and higher levels, and then we raise up on a pedestal those people that do it better than anybody else, and they're just whatever it is. It's a, whether it's art or sports or engineering feats, and we raise it up and give it a value above the value of kindness, above the value of being respectful, above the value that we put on resting in the truth that is true always. And it doesn't have any value except what the minds of the human who are observing it give it. But this paragraph is saying that when you raise your desire to be the Christ to the highest level, then reality is returned to the mind. Truth, actuality is returned to the mind. And your mind is filled with a different level of experience. And the literal world that you thought you used to know, the buildings, the cars, the governments, and all the rest, it simply becomes a temporary, harmless illusion. And you see how it has effectively, quote, hoodwinked, close quotes, your brothers and sisters, and you. Because when you awaken to the true nature of yourself as part of the Christ, the world is now seen in this transparency, and it is no longer of any fearful nature to you. You're free to walk, to abide in it as long as the body lasts, and you can do so quietly and joyfully, going about your most ordinary / extraordinary moments, except that now they've all become translated into the means whereby you demonstrate the truth of the love of creation to the world. And all of the stuff that you used to do, the reactivity, the suffering, the doubt, the depression, in other words, all of your forms of dis-ease, these can only be a reflection of the decision to use the power of the mind to desire and therefore to perceive and experience things that are unlike actuality, unlike the true kingdom. Freedom, peace, unlimitedness, and above all, fearlessness must necessarily be the result of the decision to use the power of the mind to remember and to realize and to abide in and then extend the truth that is true always. What is that? You've never been separate from your Creator. You're part of the flow of creation itself. And once you do that, then the passing phenomenon called life is simply seen as a delightful dance. It has no purpose in and of itself. Once you gave it a purpose that was unlike God's, but as Christ, the purpose that you see in the world is the same purpose that your Creator shares with you. And your will have become the same as your Creator's, to merely abide and to be of service in the process whereby those that have been, quote, hoodwinked, close quotes, they can remember the truth more easily and they can decide to become free. It no longer matters how that occurs. That is, it doesn't matter what form your teaching occurs in. It's all the same. and you see no difference between your form and someone else's, for you will recognize the teachers of the Creator. Where you are in any moment becomes a divine gift, literally dropped in your lap as an opportunity to enjoy the remembrance that you are one with your Creator. It's an opportunity to remember that everything you are seeing is a passing illusion, in the sense that it used to have a purpose that seemed concrete, and that purpose is now dissolved and gone. Here's an offered thought, quote, where did the world go? I used to think it was a fearful place. I used to think that I had to, quote, get ahead, close quotes. I used to think that there were those who could victimize me. Now, I just see harmlessness. I see it. I get it, that nothing out there can add anything to me. I simply rest at peace, delighting at play in the Creator's kingdom. And where I am, Christ abides. I can bring the Christ mind into this moment. I can ask in this moment what the Christ mind would want to express through me. So the distance from where you may yet perceive yourself to be and where you may perceive us to be is only the distance of a decision. That decision waits upon your welcome. No one can take from you the power to decide, to own your identity as creation's offspring, as part of the flow of life, as a miracle of the creative energy expressing in form. No one can take that decision from you. How serious are you willing to be about your true nature? How strongly do you desire to dissolve the mind energy that you've been pouring into the illusions and hallucinations that are amplifying your dis-ease? Now, the Western mind would find a way to turn this into a condemnation and a judgment. If you haven't been sitting in your chair for 5 minutes a day as the Christ, it's all your fault that you're suffering. You're not following the way of mastery because you're not doing this exercise. I had somebody bring that up to me the other day. Actually, two people yet so far this week, we're only on Thursday, two people this week have said, oh, it's kind of bad because I'm not doing the exercises, and I keep wanting myself to, and Yeshua says, you know, you should do these exercises. And I had to point out to the person that it also says very clearly in this book, they recommend that you wake up to the fact that you're completely free to do it or not do it. In that chapter where they talk about, you know, a transformation journal, just take 100% responsibility for doing it or not doing it. All these exercises, it's going to be okay either way. You might decide to do the exercise of sitting in a chair as Christ for 5 minutes. You might decide to do the exercise of spending 15 minutes picking up objects in your environment and looking at them and understanding how you truly don't know where it came from or what it is or what it is for. You might decide to do the transformation journal, and you might not. It's perfectly okay. It also says that. The only important thing for your moving forward in the realization of what is true always is that you understand it has been given unto you the power to decide. The choice is always yours. It can't be taken away from you. And if you decide to sit in a chair for 5 minutes a day as the Christ, not trying to become the Christ, but to wake up to the realization that within you is a place where you can connect with divine guidance. And when you do that, it starts to dissolve the processes you had been using to create reactivity, suffering, doubt, and depression. And it creates an experience for you that this world that seemed so important and so either necessary for your joy or such a cause of your upset seems to disappear. And you wake up to the realization that wherever you are in any moment is a divine gift that's literally been dropped in your lap as an opportunity to enjoy the remembrance that you are one with the flow of creation, as an opportunity to remember that everything you are seeing is a passing illusion in the sense that it used to have a purpose that seemed concrete, and now that purpose has dissolved and gone away. When you reach that point, you'll have realizations like, wow, where did the world go? I used to think this was a fearful place. I used to think that I just absolutely had to struggle to get ahead. I used to think that there were those who could victimize me. Now, I just see harmlessness. I see nothing out there that can add anything to me or take anything of value from me. I'm here, and I'm simply at rest and at peace, delighting at play in the Creator's kingdom. And where I am, Christ abides. I can actually be the conduit for the Christ mind expressing in this moment. The next section is titled, Observing Your Choices. The text reads, look well then in this moment. Stop and look around. Look within the mind. And then observe the simple day that you've been living thus far. And ask yourself what you have desired in this day. And allow memory to bring to you choices that you have made. Look upon those choices for whatever feelings, perceptions, and thoughts you may have had. Look upon them with perfect innocence. Simply observe, quote, oh, in that moment, I was certainly not desiring peace. In that moment, I certainly wasn't desiring perfect remembrance. How interesting. My desire had moved away from extending the good, the holy, and the beautiful. No wonder I was feeling so conflicted. No wonder I generated so much anger and frustration. No wonder I began to shake with fear. The text goes on and says, if you can find a moment in this day that you have lived so far, even if you began reading this lesson 5 minutes after you got out of bed, if you look well into those 5 minutes, you just might discover that there has been at least a moment in which you were not deliberately choosing to desire the remembrance of union with your Creator. Yep, pretty safe to say. I've had a few moments today where I was not focused on remembering my union with all of creation. I remember a couple of them as I was trying to get out of the door in time to make it to the office before my first appointment. Yep, there were a few of them. Different things, different. And a couple of them where I got more than a little off the mark and felt a little frustration or a little sadness or a little fear. Now, the text goes on and says, now, does that mean that you're supposed to be walking around saying, I desire union with God? I desire union with God? I desire union with creation? I want to be the Christ? No. Those are just words. The desire is a feeling. It's an energy moving through you. It pervades the heart. You might say that you feel it in the body, which is really just the depth of the mind anyway. Look well and see if there was a moment in which you were using the power of the mind to decide against the kingdom. Were you using the power of the mind to argue for or to rationalize your anger at a fellow brother or sister or a life circumstance? When you find that moment, just look at it. Observe it with innocence and say, ah, I could have chosen otherwise. That is the simplicity and the power that the kingdom is. Shift your thoughts. Shift what you value. Shift what you place value upon, and your experience changes. And you begin to experience, as you always have, exactly what you desire. Only now you are awake to the process. The text goes on and says, the world remains uncaused by anything outside of your mind. Yet within it, you are given complete dominion. So within the field of energy we call the human mind, you are the one who's been given dominion. You have the power to change the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment. And it is the focus of that conscious awareness in each new present moment which actually creates your experience of life in the moment. This means, the text goes on and says, this means that within the one mind of Christ, individuation occurs. For a moment, perceive the one Christ mind as an ocean where individual waves arise, made of the same substance, perfect freedom, perfect knowledge, and of union with their Creator. In that freedom, the power to decide or to desire is present, and desire begets worlds without end. That is what your entire planet came from. That is what your entire solar system came from. Your entire universe is born of desire. And when you awaken to that, when you see the power to create your experience that is always expressing from what you choose to focus your awareness upon, when you tune into the difference between thinking of something and feeling the energy of desire moving through you, when you see the truth of the values you have placed on different people, places, things, and activities in your life, and you see the truth of their illusion, when you waken from the dream, it no longer has the power to affect you, positively or negatively. You realize, oh, that was just a dream. That was just a dream. Once you see the truth, it loses its power over you. As long as you think and you believe you have to achieve or accomplish or get something in the outside world to change or get someone to think of you differently in order for you to have value, when you believe that, that becomes your experience. Once you see through it, it fades away faster than the mist before the morning sun. And it's okay if you desire something more then awakening to the truth of your true nature is perfectly okay. It says it over and over in this book. Those who are not in the physical body, those who are aware of your true nature as love and connected to them, are infinitely patient in waiting for you to awaken, in waiting for you to choose differently. You're the only one who's judging yourself as bad or wrong for not being more awake in the moment. And it's what, you know, this world would call double jeopardy, because first you have the dis-ease experience, and then you have the I'm beating myself up because I created a dis-ease experience. So you're punishing yourself twice. And this work, along with so many other deep spiritual traditions, just continually suggests that you stop creating unnecessary pain in your life. What's creating unnecessary pain in your life? Judging yourself badly, wrongly, negatively. It's entirely possible that much of the anxiety, much of the upset, much of the sadness, much of the fear, much of the depression that you feel is not being created at the conscious, logical level. It may be old stuff in your system that you're not even aware that you're giving strong value to. Because everything you've ever done and experienced is in your energy system. It's like Paramahansa Yogananda would say, everything is consciousness in you. Everything you've ever experienced is part of your consciousness. This thing people call the unconscious is simply the part of your consciousness that you're turning away from, that you're blocking your awareness of, that you don't want to see. You're choosing to not see. And it's entirely possible that there's a lot of what's driving this depressive experience you might be having or anxious experience you might be having that is not part of you consciously, actively thinking anything about the way of mastery or sitting in a chair as Christ or being angry at someone else. And yet it's in your system and it's getting resonated. And as it gets resonated, you feel it. So that's why Michael and Jeannie present so many tools for looking at, uncovering, stirring up, or bringing to conscious awareness what might these traumas be. What might these negative beliefs about myself that I downloaded through the process of having this event happen that I label as traumatic, what might that be? How can I become clear about what that thought process is or that negative belief is so I can bring it to the light of consciousness and see it as false? And in that moment, have its power over me be dismantled, because it doesn't have power over me that I haven't given it with where I'm choosing to focus my conscious awareness, the power of the mind energy. The power of the focus of my conscious awareness to create my experience of life in each new present moment. That's one of the keys that we're brought to from this spiritual tradition and many other spiritual traditions, awakening to the way it actually works. The more awake I become, the more aware I become, the more options I have that I see before me for ways to create an experience that's loving, respectful, gratitude-based, appreciation-based. And And it's okay if you do it, and it's okay if you don't. The world is not broken. It doesn't need you to fix it. You're not broken. You don't need to be fixed or healed. If you're experiencing yourself as damaged and broken and unlovable, it is because you have created, unwittingly or wittingly, you have created a set of negative beliefs about yourself that are completely false. And it's only in the seeing through them as false that they truly lose their power over you. It's like Guy Finley would say, the mind churns and does its mechanical level of processing, and it keeps working, and it keeps struggling, and it keeps doing something until it wakes up and realizes that it is not the solution to its pain. It is the source of its own pain. And when that realization hits the mind, then the mind calms. But until that time, the mind just does what it always does. It operates at that mechanical level of functioning where it just keeps repeating the process that was programmed into it. The trivialities of the intellect, as the Way of Mastery would talk about it. You cannot change your true nature. You can suffer. You can create suffering because you live in or as or from the position that your illusion and your hallucination and your dream are the truth. And one of the ways that Abraham talks about it is every time you experience a negative emotion, because you're looking at someone or something outside of you and you're saying, this is wrong, this is bad, this shouldn't be happening, the negative emotional state that you're experiencing at that time is a direct result of you choosing to view life differently than your source is viewing life. The very thing you're looking at, whether it's a person or a life event or source energy, the creator, the mind of the Christ, looks at that and sees the extension of love expressing, sees a perfection in the flow of creation. And if you're generating a dis-ease situation, negative emotional state, tension, anger, fear, etc., it's one way to think about it is because you're choosing an interpretation for life that is at odds with the interpretation Creator itself is using to look at that very person or that very situation. And when you wake up and see the truth of what is, then the world becomes this transparent illusion. And you'll see what you used to believe and think, and you'll see the objects, but they will have no value for you the way they once did. You will see it only as the shimmering radiance of the creative energy expressing in form. So, as always, thank you all for being here. And we have one more day this week. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I will welcome Jeannie Rice and invite her to turn on her microphone.
Hi there. Thank you.
You're very welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful
show. Okay. Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Thursday, September the 1st. Man, August wasn't even here, was it? September 1st, 2022. And our calling number is 563-999-3581, and press 1. And that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And I see we already have Michael with his hand up. So I'm going to welcome you while the other Michael gets dialed in. How are you doing today, sir?
Good, Jeannie. How are you doing?
I am good. Went and picked up Aria from school, and She's sitting here eating a watermelon snack and was telling me about her day. So let me tell Michael that you're already on when he gets dialed in so that he knows that you're already ready to rock with the continued conversation. The second.
Sounds wonderful. So Aria goes one half day.
Yeah.
To school. Okay, I see.
Yeah, she
goes
from 8:15 to 12:15.
Nice.
Pre-kindergarten. Anyway, she was just telling me that they've started doing they've got a pup, Pip's a pup, and he's teaching them how to pray.
Is the pup isn't real.
He's not real, no. But he's part of your learning, isn't he? So they're starting to get into. I'm trying to open a package for her, and it is stuck. But yeah, she's learning to write her name, and they're starting to talk about God, and so it's a Catholic school. And so I know some of the public schools, they don't do that. So, but anyway.
No.
Yeah.
Interesting. I actually attended Catholic school in my younger years in grammar school. Yes. Quite an experience.
There's several preschools around here. She wasn't old enough to start kindergarten because she's still just four. She just turned four. But there were a couple of private... Honey, wait just a moment, please. I'm on the radio show. A couple of private schools that do the pre-kindergarten. So the St. Anne's Catholic Church is one of them, and so that's where she was accepted. And anyway, so how's your process been going with the worksheet? I'm excited to go to the next stage.
Yes, I am too. I had a conversation with a wonderful local friend yesterday afternoon, and making some plans for future worksheet meetings. So that was exciting.
That's cool. Support meeting?
I'm thinking so. It's all in the initial stages right now.
Well, there is on the website, there is a lot of information. You know, when I first met Michael, I did a support group for about a year before I went on the road with him. And so just based on some of the experiences that I had and some of the not-so-good experiences that I had, going to the website as we speak so I can tell you where you can find it. But I put out a whole lot of things, just kind of like ideas if you're, you know, starting a support group, things to consider, things to avoid, you know, stuff like that. Let's see here.
That is so great. You captured that.
Yeah. Work support program, support team. I'll find it, and I will put that in the notes. I haven't been to it in a long time, but I'll find it, and I'll put the link to it in the notes, and I'll send it to you too. But it's just, you know, thoughts and ideas. And hopefully help get started on it.
Yes, that's wonderful. I appreciate that thought and encouragement. Yeah. And it'll certainly help us here and myself down the road as I expand. Yeah. That's wonderful.
Yeah, for sure. So let me see if Michael's having issues getting on. He's still not showing up on the switchboard. So, okay, he's with us now. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. My apology for being late today, folks. We have a wonderful neighbor that has been He has a forest in his backyard, and he's been collecting and composting leaves for several years, and he invited us to come over and just do what we needed with it, take what we wanted. And so I had to get in the shower quickly because I was broadcasting the compost by hand on the garden, and I was a mess. So I was covered in dirt. I had to get it off before I could come to the show. But anyway, got all the gardens dressed, and this is just like this guy's just giving us gold to enhance our garden. So it's pretty sweet. So how are you, Michael?
I'm doing great, my friend, and I'm glad to hear you all are doing well. And you got some wonderful gold there, some good humus. Humus, is that what they call?
Humus. Well, humus. I don't know, compost. Leaves and grasses and sticks and dirt all mixed together to a pretty well composted mix. And so we started a new garden back at the beginning of this year, a third garden, and we had no soil in it. It was just grass, and we started right on top of it. So we had some flowers that Jeannie's grandmother had planted in this area, and we just used a small portion of this. Well, yesterday both Jeannie and I got ambitious, and we decided to literally tear up dig up the flowers and transplant them elsewhere, and put a cover crop on it. And then we got this dressing from our neighbor to cover up our cover crop and add a new layer of soil to this third garden, which is pretty new. We've produced some awesome squash and zucchini and tomatoes and all kinds of stuff, but it was just the first year, so we're building enhancements.
That sounds wonderful. My mouth waters for all of that, especially the watermelon that Arius having. That sounds wonderful, too.
That's the one thing that hasn't done well this year. We got one really tasty watermelon that we actually ate yesterday, but it was only about 4 inches in diameter. And that was it for this year. We planted 3 different watermelon plants. Everything else flourished, but I don't know whether there's something missing in the soil or whether the plants were damaged. I don't know. But anyway, we're learning, growing, and the fact this gentleman has maybe 3/4 of an acre or so that he's been raking and potting leaves for years. So he's just got all this beautiful composted material that is now dressing our garden.
That is wonderful.
I'm hoping he likes Thai food, because I think one night this week, Jeannie and I are going to order. We've been staying away from restaurants, but we're going to probably order in some Thai food. And if he likes Thai food, we're going to buy him dinner, get that delivered with him. It's such an awesome gift that he's given to us. It's fabulous.
Now, as you so wonderfully termed, it is gold. That is just doesn't get much better.
For sure. And I just sowed the buckwheat in the in this third garden yesterday, and a little while ago, as I was broadcasting this compost, I stirred up what I'd covered up yesterday with a load of it, and they're already sprouting. So we're going to start getting little green heads popping up, and we'll soon mow that back into the ground and get our fall and winter crops in this garden. So
that is so
that's
neat.
Our project for today.
That's a good adventure. I've never grown a buckwheat, but I did on a similar note see my first amaranth plant in a neighbor's garden just a day or two ago. And that was a surprise. I've not seen that beautiful, beautiful plant.
Gorgeous,
really,
yeah.
Really,
we did some amaranth
beautiful
plants last year, and they just didn't do much, unfortunately. So we haven't done amaranth this year. We're doing everything else, but
wow.
Daikon radish was our cover crop last year, one of them. Chuck had suggested it. And, oh, man, we had those puppies a foot and a half long, these daikon radishes.
Oh, wow.
They dig really deeply into the soil, open up the soil. The hill that we're on, you know, the house was built here, I don't know, 60, 70 years ago. And it was basically built on a clay hill and you know, maybe an inch of soil, and then grass, and that's what it's been. And so we're converting. We've got I don't know, probably what 20 by 2400 600, about 1,000 square feet now that we've built soil on. We probably built about using compost. We got about 4 tons of it from the local dump. They collect leaves and twigs and grasses and compost it. So we started out with about 4 tons of that in one of the gardens, and we transferred some of that to our third garden. But we probably built about, I don't know, maybe 6-7 tons of soil so far. And if you've been watching any of the videos, any of the specials, we're at a point where the experts in soil are saying that the earth has probably got about 50 years of viable soil left, and we're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So that was part of inspired us to start working on gardens, is to build soil. And we're actually working on developing a community project where we can build a community garden near one of the indigent communities here in this in Bristol, Virginia, or Tennessee, either one, whichever it ends up being. We actually went to a garden center yesterday to get some plants, and they were gone, and found out that the owners had passed, and the place had just been sitting there vacant. We hadn't been there for almost a year, so it was about 9 months ago, back in December or so. Not quite 9 months ago, that the owner died, and the place has just been abandoned. So we're going to see if maybe there's a way to get the family to donate that in his name, because he was really into the gardens and food and, you know, beauty. And so, you know, maybe they'll support us. There's an empty house nearby, and think maybe we can get that converted into a homeless shelter and get some homeless people working in the garden center and building a really, truly viable food community for people who, you know, who live in the food deserts of America. It's sad when you look at the way food is distributed and how actual food stores, you know, there's so many communities. So they've got access to Coca-Cola and ice cream and potato chips and corn chips and sugar drinks and coffee, but they don't have access to food. I mean, you know, people don't have cars. You know, the closest food store might be 5 miles away. Oh, yeah, they got a corner store they can go buy a Coke at, but that's a tragedy. And so we're hoping to make an impact on this community with that project, if that comes together. We're learning. We're learning.
That's really great. Something on my heart also, if I can start growing again. And we need to reach out. We need to bring the community together and help folks understand, like you say, food, in quotes, is not what we find generally at the store. We have to really dig for it and look for it.
Well, since I've been working, you know, with the soil here, one of the things that's occurred to me, you know, being with a background in medicine and how do we support life, and, you know, the whole work being about enhancing life, it's like a really simple question has come to mind, and that is, can you get life from death? That's a pretty simple question, and I would think anybody with a half a brain would say, no, you can't get life from death. That's silly. But, you know, millions and millions of acres of farmland are sprayed at 10 gallons per acre with glyphosate, which kills absolutely everything in the soil and every organism and every seed and everything except what's planted, and then it needs chemical fertilizers to grow, but it's growing on death. Can you get life from that?
Mm-hmm.
And people call that food, and what I've realized is you can't get food from death. If you don't have soil, if you've got dirt, which is what commercial agriculture works on, is dirt, then you don't get life from it. It's not soil, it's dirt. And there's a difference. There's supposed to be life in the soil. That's the key to making soil work. And most people think dirt and soil are the same thing. I used to think that. I used to think, well, it's dirt, you know, so what? But, man, when you look at the microorganisms we've sown, we've done nematodes, we've done all kinds of organisms to help to build our soil and make it actually productive of food that has life in it. It doesn't just look like food, but it actually is. It's alive.
Mm-hmm.
So
this is so critical for humanity. So critical.
Absolutely.
And
it's as critical as forgiveness is.
Yes, but either way,
it's as critical as forgiveness. It's an aspect of forgiveness. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Humans can't survive long-term without forgiveness. Humans can't survive long-term without food. And most of the culture goes to the grocery store and buys what looks like food, but it's fake. It's an old Greek trick called sophistry. The sophists were a group of Greek philosophers who traveled Greece, charging big bucks to the wealthy to teach the children of the wealthy how to control the peons by lying to them and making the lies appear true. Fake, looking real. And that's what the food is today in our culture. It's fake. Mm-hmm. It looks real. Gee, that looks like an apple. But is it really? Yeah. So
that's
all part
of
the conversation, too.
That's really neat. I will mention that the glyphosate issue is much more serious than I think we were first uncovered.
Oh.
And those who want to know more, they can research the work of Dr. Stephanie Seneff. She is an amazing researcher, and what is coming out now about glyphosate, I mean, it's in everything. We really got to be cautious. So,
what I find amazing with glyphosate is there are multi-million dollar lawsuits being settled for people who have cancer as a result of being exposed to glyphosate. And if I go to, I won't mention the particular mark that I'm thinking of, but it's a large one around the country, I can still go buy it off the shelf. I mean, multi-million-dollar lawsuits over this stuff, and you can still buy it on the shelf. It's like, boggles my mind. It shows you who controls the so-called law in America. I mean, it's time for us to wake up.
Yeah.
Time for people to take back over the control of this country. And instead of, corporate welfare, let's start supporting people. Let's start having gardens that people can eat from and actually demand that food stores move into communities where there are food deserts, where nothing's available but a sugared, caffeinated garbage drink. And yeah, it's just time for a wake up. So we'll do our little part in our little corner and see what we can inspire in others and carry on. You know, we've been doing one garden at a time.
Right?
We've been doing intensives for almost 40 years now. And, way back in the earliest intensives, we did total fresh and raw food. We introduced, people would come who ate dead animals and who thought that what they bought in the store was actual food. And they were scared. A lot of people were afraid. You know, the idea of not eating a piece of dead flesh for 9 days when they came to an intensive was frightening to people. And at the end of the 9 days, so many people who were literally addicted, and it is a stimulant that people get addicted to, flesh, when they didn't have that for 9 days and they didn't have caffeine and they didn't have sugar, so many of them would leave and say, man, if I could prepare this food at home, I would eat like this forever. I'd never go back to that old diet again. But, I got a kitchen that's set up to provide dead animals. Like, well, so just do one or two meals a week, start with a practice. And I say that from experience because I was raised in a family where my mother, if she didn't feed us meat 3 times a day, she felt she was deficient as a mother. And it took me a long time to understand that the human body is not designed for to digest dead flesh. Decaying flesh does not belong in the human digestive system. But it's where the money is. Follow the money. It's an old edge.
Oh, yes. And again,
so let's
like
get
you
back
mentioned
to
earlier,
forgiveness.
Yeah, we're just deluded on all these points as a culture. So, yes, forgiveness.
Definitely
wake-up
times.
Yes, I'm with you. Exciting to be a part of it.
Well,
so,
delighted that you are and inspired by the work you've done to get to the point where you're able to ask the questions that you can to pull out the information. And then, we'll have an archives for anybody and everybody.
That's exciting.
So we're blessed by you, sir.
Exciting.
Thank you.
Well, I was likewise, and it is it's good to hear everyone on the show and different thoughts. It really helps us all come together. So thank you all, too, for providing that platform. So
honored and delighted.
We were on
number three.
Thank you. And I looking at my notes, you talked about pretty happy if goals are fulfilled, and when they're not, We get upset. So we were talking about the goal aspect. I think that's where we're leading
off. It's a
off.
Principle.
Does that sound right?
Yeah. It's a principle that I had no idea of when I first started to work with First Century Aramaic Forgiveness. In fact, I'd been introduced to this idea of canceling goals early in my exposure to the Aramaic. And when I first heard this idea that the word shebag, which has been translated as forgive, actually means to cancel, it didn't make any sense to me. But, you know, every once in a while I'd explain in my workshops what forgiveness was in Aramaic and had to do with canceling goals. And, you know, that didn't particularly mean anything to me. But over time, as I would share that with people, I'd have a certain number of people that come back and say, you know, I've been doing that canceling of goals things. Man, has my life changed. I said, really? And that set me on a track to understanding what goes on when you actually engage in this first century Aramaic tool of forgiveness. And the whole core rests on the fact that goals are the driver and the selector of information, the recruiter of information that's going to be used to build our perceptual constructs. You know, if you've got a sports recruiter, you know, they go out to different high schools and they find kids, you know, girls that are really great at soccer and guys that are great at football or what have you, or basketball, whatever it is. And they recruit them and bring them in, train them and, you know, put them on a team. And now you've got a winning team. Well, there's a recruiter in the mind. You know, when you realize that Harvard research that we talked about that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, there's a maximum of 9 bits of data that goes into formulating your perception. Now, if that's true, if Harvard is correct on that, and it's some of the most quoted, it's been research, it's been around for over half a century, and it's been quoted more often than any other psychological research in history, that when you realize that perception is a construct of the mind, that we're not seeing through our eyes what's happening out there, that our brain is generating the images that we see, then we realize that the goal we hold determines which content from carbon-based memory is used to build our perception. And so if I load content that causes my mind to use hostility or fear, my mind is now using corrupt data to show me what I think is going on in the world, but really, it's just showing me what's going on inside of myself. And once I recognize that, then I realize, or what came to me after years of working with that, actually about 35 years to understand why you would cancel a perfectly good goal, and that is that if you want your perception to be of the highest quality, then obviously you have to have the highest or the best raw material. And the thing that selects which raw material is going to be used in building a particular reality in a mind is our goals. If we load a goal that resonates hostility or fear when someone doesn't achieve that goal for us, then our perception is degraded. We're now living in a lie. And as I said yesterday, most people love their lies. They want to believe that everybody else is the problem in their lives. And so, literally, once I commit to a result, and that's what goal is, a commitment to a result. It's not an intention, it's not a hope, it's not a wish, it's not a maybe, it's when I make a commitment to a goal. When I'm committed to, you better do this, or else, I won't be your friend, or I won't be happy, or whatever. Once I make that commitment, I now take an intention and turn it into a goal. You've probably heard quoted before because they understood this in ancient times, but the meaning has been lost. But here's where you recapture the meaning. You probably remember them saying something to the effect of, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Everybody has good intentions, but if you have a good intention, an intention doesn't move a muscle. Only when you elevate the intention to a goal do your muscles move. And it doesn't matter whether the muscle is your tongue or your arms or your feet or whatever it is. When I commit to a result, when I take an intention and turn it into this is the result I want to have and I'm committed to it, then I've created a goal. Now that goal, depending on the information it resonates in my mind, causes my mind to serve up whatever data it's got related to that goal. If the data is related to or keyed to hostility or fear, my perception has just been destroyed. And I'm now simply living in the past and functioning, trying to produce results out of a mind locked into hostility and fear. And until I get rid of that goal, which has the effect of collapsing the construct of my mind that's based in hostility or fear, and as I say, it took me 35 years to understand this. When I cancel the goal, the perceptual construct collapses in on its own footprint. Now I have direct access to the hidden unconscious part of my mind. That's how I can consistently, persistently, and reliably get into my own unconscious mind. And when I find and I can own my hostility and fear and clean up the unconscious dynamics in my mind, I no longer create my life unconsciously. I get to step into conscious creation, whole different game than playing out of why is this happening to me again? Or why are they doing this to me again? Rather than playing out of those unconscious dynamics. So people will say, but, you know, I just had this wonderful goal for him to cherish and honor me. Why would I cancel that perfectly wonderful goal? What's wrong with it? It's not that there's anything wrong with the goal. I mean, you know, it's a perfectly awesome goal to have for virtually everybody in one's life, that they would honor and cherish you and that you would honor and cherish them. Nothing wrong with that goal. Well, then why the heck would I cancel it? Because when you loaded it into your mind, it keyed into your hostility and fear, degraded your perception, and now all of a sudden you're struggling with the blame religion. Somebody else is the problem in your life. When you cancel the goal, you get to access the hidden parts of your own mind. And that took me 35 years to understand it. And once you start to do it, it's monumental. And you get to access things. It's not a fun process necessarily, because you get to access things that perhaps not only you, but everybody in your bloodline for the last 100 generations have been hiding from themselves. And that's not fun. When you start looking at that kind of stuff, it can be pretty traumatic, because there have been traumatic things happen in our lives and in our bloodlines, and we've never learned to stay open and process them. In this work, we define processing as the ability to keep love conscious, active, and present when something less than love is moving in us. When you can do that, then you can step into processing. And it's the processing aspect of forgiveness that removes the underlying hidden unconscious dynamics of hostility and fear. Make sense?
I'm grasping it. Yes, it's coming. I'm listening to the part where if the goal raises hostility or fear, so does that mean there are some goals that wouldn't do that, or is that determined on each one's mind?
Well, it depends on the content.
Because of my mind?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the content of the mind. If let's say you've had nothing but wondrous relationships with women in your life, and you're thinking about getting married, or you want to get married, and this new woman shows up in your life, and when she does, wonderment, delight, joy, happiness, fabulous shows up. But if around, let's say, some particular issue, there's old trauma related to mom, and the issue that related to mom is resonated by a goal you have for this woman. You know, to date, everything you've seen about everything your mind has shown you about her is how wonderful and awesome and sweet and blessed and awesome and fabulous she is. And then one day, all of a sudden, it's like, what happened here? What's wrong with her? Well, what happened to my perception? I moved from perception based in brain cells keyed to love to perception of brain cells keyed to some form of hostility or fear. And now I'm going to see her, because, of course, if I'm in denial, You know, if all those years I said, Mom made me really mad and hurt me, then all those years of Mom made me mad and hurt me, I'm going to blame everybody else for making me mad and hurting me when I'm mad and hurt. When I can stop, and of course I'll tend to attract someone with a matching bag of garbage, and if each of us can stop the conversation about, look what you're doing to me, this is all you, and step into, oh, yeah, I realize I've got something to work on here, then we can create cooperative teams in our relationships for healing rather than conflicting games where, you know, it becomes who's the smartest at being able to blame the other. Getting rid of, letting go of the blame game and stepping into cooperation and support, those issues are going to come up. You take them into a relationship, they're going to come up. There's no choice about that. It's just whether they come up in the context of responsibility, cooperation, support, or in the context of the old blame religions, which, you know, they pretty much run the world at this point.
Amazing. Would it be
and if there's nothing in your – go ahead.
Would it be correct to say that if I'm having conversation with this woman and
– right.
What she's saying does not resonate fear or hostility with me, then it's an okay goal.
Everything's awesome. Well,
everything's
every
awesome.
Goal is okay.
So
there's no not okay goal. It's just if you load a goal that resonates some unresolved hostility and fear, then the goal is a setup for canceling and therefore accessing and cleaning up the part of the mind that goal resonates in you.
That is the key I was thinking. So, like you say, just to repeat, the time it resonates an issue with me, then that's where the work needs to be done.
Right. And it will tend to be, because of the law of resonance, it'll tend to be where there are matching bags of garbage. In our Healing Through Relationships workshop, we point out that most relationships, they call love relationships, but they're not love relationships at all. They're just based in matching bags of garbage. That's how we start out wonderful and sweet and awesome. And then what do they say? The honeymoon is over. What's the honeymoon is over mean? It means I loaded a goal in my mind. He or she didn't fulfill that goal for me, and it brought up hostility or fear that I projected into my brain's image of them, and now I no longer see them through the filter of Rachma. I no longer see them lawfully through my mind. I see them through my hostility and fear, and I'm in trouble, and then I want to blame them for my trouble. No, you see, it's all you. Well, no. It's all us. Mine's mine, yours is yours. When I can language responsibly that, oh yeah, that brings up that for me, yep, then I can start to see the evidence in my mind that otherwise is hidden from me. And when I can see it, I can clean it up. What I can't see, what I deny and talk about everybody else with, I can never fix. And it will become literally my demise. It will literally be the cause of death.
So amazing, we joke as a culture about the honeymoon being over, but it's very serious.
It's really serious. I mean, you know,
yeah.
What are we at? Over 50% of marriages end up in divorce?
Mm-hmm. And I know I've brought up at least a few times on the show in the past month the goals, but I'm getting it today. Thank you, Michael. I'm getting it.
Awesome. That's the objective. Yeah. So what you want to do in step number three is look back at the situation number one, and as precisely as you possibly can, you want to identify the goal you held for the person that you named in number 1C,
mm-hmm.
or the situation. So if when I get to the exact precise goal, then when I cancel it, the effect will be for the pained perception to collapse in on its own footprint and give me access to what I need to heal. If I and oftentimes people will shift goals in the middle of a worksheet because they're getting close to something coming up that they really don't want to deal with. So that would look like, you know, I've got the boss, and the boss picks on me and he's mean, and what I really want him to do is, well, I'm not sure what I want him to do. I just, you know, oh, I know what the goal is. I just want to have a nice life. Well, if I, in the situation where I'm working on the boss and I put in number three, I just want to have a nice life, I just change worksheets to a worksheet on myself. It's got nothing to do with the boss anymore. So if I'm doing a worksheet, and you know, in the Y workshop, that's always the example I use of this relationship with the boss. If I'm doing a worksheet on the boss, then I want to look at what precisely is what I, the goal that I hold that the boss is not fulfilling for me. And when I cancel that goal, the part of my mind that projects my pain into my brains, into my boss, so that I can actually convince myself and believe that this pain that I've been through 87 different times with 42 different people and remember from the very earliest parts of my life, I can pretend it's actually about the boss instead of about me.
Mm-hmm.
So the more exact you are in identifying precisely the goal that you hold, the more powerful each worksheet will be. And sometimes somebody might do two or three worksheets on a particular situation before they really start to admit to themselves and tap into what the goal really is. So it's a process.
I see. And that's where the additional worksheet comes in then.
Correct.
Correct.
And there very often are shades. Yeah, you'll start with the initial one, and there's the Hydra. Might actually end up going into 20 different arenas in my mind. And each goal, you know, remember again, when, you know, right now I'm outside, so I'm seeing a brick wall and a roof and a chimney and a swimming pool and a table and a fireplace and a bench. In order for my mind to generate that detailed picture, a huge amount of data has to be moving in the unconscious for my mind to produce that detailed and complex a picture, a reality. And so each worksheet that you'll do, there may be, you know, 1,000 different sets of brain cells, 10,000, 100,000 sets of brain cells and genetic content that is resonated in any given situation. And a different goal, a different aspect of the goal will cause those different parts of the mind to be used. And so with that situation with a boss, I might end up canceling the goal for my boss to treat me decent in a decent way and pay me fairly, let's say. And then the next worksheet might be, and remember I talked about the number one worksheet where this woman called in. She was a medical doctor and had a situation with a real estate agent, and we walked her through a worksheet. That was one of the first ones we did 11 years ago. We walked her through a worksheet, and she started out with the situation with her real estate agent not taking care of her dad's estate and being really angry with this real estate agent. Then she moved to, oh, this isn't about the real estate agent at all that's representing my father's estate. This is about when I was treating a young boy for cancer and was able to get him off of chemo, and his chemo doctor came after me and had my license, my medical license revoked. And then she moved into the next phase and recognized that it was about rage she had at her father from when she was a kid. So there are the layers and the stages that she went through. So, you know, when this medical doctor, who was the male, came after her license, he resonated that old issue with dad. When the real estate agent isn't taking care of dad's property properly and it's costing her money because the property is degraded and now worthless, she's, you know, enraged at the real estate agent, but her rage goes back to that situation with dad as a kid. And until we go back to that original issue and process through it, we're not going to resolve our rage. Everything that smacks up, you know, in this case, it was to do with men. Anything that smacks up, I mean, there's somebody with that kind of an issue going on, I wouldn't want to be in a marriage with them. Because every time, you know, that set of brain cells is fired up, then bingo, you become the object of that rage. And until we start to take responsibility for and process through our rage, we're going to find all kinds of people that we say cause our rage. And, you know, it's a total lie. Nobody can cause anything to happen inside of you. It's a great song. I think it was one of the Eagles songs, a line in it that says, "And she can't take you anywhere you don't already know how to go." Nobody can take you anywhere that you don't already know how to go. And if they can take you there, they are your gift. They are a present for you because they're showing you the part of you that you need to heal.
When we do these worksheets, we find out things that we probably never imagined are linked together to our current status in life. That's what I'm hearing.
Well, have you been on a show where I've read the quote from Francois Fenelon? Have you heard that one?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, where we're talking, I'm going to look that up because this was a quote from a 17th century Catholic archbishop, actually. And he's writing about the work. You know, he's not a churchianity kind of guy. He's recognizing what it is that people need to deal with in their lives. His name was Francois Fenelon. Let's see. Here we are. So here's what he wrote. Somewhere he was born in 1651 and died in 1715. So somewhere in there he wrote this. "As the light increases, we see ourselves to be worse than we thought. We are amazed at our former blindness as we see issuing forth from the depths of our heart a whole swarm of shameful feelings, like filthy reptiles crawling from a hidden cave. We never could have believed that we had harbored such things, and we stand aghast as we watch them gradually appear. But while our faults diminish, the light by which we see them waxes brighter, and we're filled with horror. Bear in mind, for your comfort, that we only perceive our malady when the cure begins." And then Carl Jung writes, "The demise of society won't be a physical threat, but instead mass delusion, a collective psychosis of sorts. Greater than all the physical dangers are the tremendous effects of delusional ideas." And boy, look at the political world today. "Of delusional ideas, which are yet denied all reality by our world-blinded consciousness. Our much-vaunted reason and our boundlessly overestimated will are sometimes utterly powerless in the face of unreal thoughts. Anything new should be questioned and tested with caution, for it may very easily turn out to be only a new disease. That is why true progress is impossible without mature judgment." He notes, this is Carl Jung, "The wolf inside the man is far more a threat to human existence than external forces. When those mental forces become so toxic as to harm our overall well-being, an individual on a collective level, is a psychic epidemic can result. He warned that modern society was prone to collapse due to a pandemic of delusional ideas." And that's what we're talking about, is uncovering those unconscious delusional ideas and doing it through a practiced life that, while it accesses those horrors, stays connected to active present love. Because when an individual does that, everything of the delusional mind dissolves in the face of it. You don't have to figure it out. You don't have to fix it. You don't have to, you know, surgery. You don't do any of that. All you have to do is be in the practice of cultivating your relationship with active present love and accessing the hidden unconscious dynamics and working through them. Changes the whole game.
Mm-hmm. Those are powerful.
And that's what we're here to do.
Powerful.
Yeah. It's right on track. So what is it that each of us needs to look at and deal with? Well, all I can say, having been doing it for the last 50 years, it ain't pretty. It ain't fun. But with support and a community, it can be done. The community is a group of people where everyone in the community lends the hem of their garment to the healing of every other one in the community. That's what a community is. So we have groups of people who live together in a city or a town or what have you, and they call them communities, but they're not communities at all. And so this work is about developing a true community based in the truth of who we are as human beings and supporting the working through of anything that's left less than love.
So ancient societies had this practice.
If you go back to the first century Aramaic, that's where this understanding came from. And the Greeks couldn't stand it. Because the whole Greek game is, you got to control those peons. So what do? You feed them all the hostility and fear you can. The blame god is up there ready to kill them on a minute's notice. Is filled with vengeance and anger, and will take vengeance for you if you let go of it. That's what they'll tell you. What does that do? It just locks people into this whole insane game of hostility and fear, forgetting who they are. Go back to Yeshua, and how many times does he return to and try to say to those who had no brain cells to hear it, tried to say, you got to connect with love, guys. You got to live as a human being. You've got to discover yourself as love and experience that and express that in whenever you think of the Creator or whenever you think of a neighbor. And neighbor in Aramaic means anybody that you think about. Neighbor isn't the guy down the block. Neighbor is anybody that you think about. So who is it in your life that you have difficulty holding a space of active present love for? And it doesn't matter who it is. You know, if it's Hitler, then there's deep work to be done. Could one be a space of conscious active present love for the likes of Adolf Hitler? Well, if they can't, then they haven't discovered their own human life yet. And they're blaming someone else for what's going on. Does that mean that the person you hold a space of active love for, you approve of, you go over and you hug them and you say, hey, look how great it is that you're such a vicious person? No. You might actually take action to put them in jail out of love because they're not safe in the community, that they're a danger in the community. That's what jails actually ostensibly are for, to protect the community from those who do damage with the liberty and the resources that they have. Early in my teaching career, I had a mentor named Judge Asadi Kelly. He taught me that very well. Man who put thousands of people in prison, but he never punished one of them. He would express his love toward the person, no matter how heinous the crime, and say, the city took up a collection. They built a building with bars, and they asked me to decide who's safe in the community and who doesn't. And you're not safe. So, love you like a brother, but you're going to jail. And by the way, with this rap sheet, it's for life. And if you'd like to heal, I'll sentence you to lousy living. We cut recidivism in his jails by over 90% with that course.
How remarkable. That's what we need today. So neighbor can mean the person next door, could mean the person across the continent, family member, or anyone from our generational past.
If I think of the Russian peasant, if I think of Hitler who lived several decades ago, if I think of Genghis Khan who lived centuries ago, they're my neighbor. If I think of myself, I'm my own neighbor. The same law applies. I'm required to keep Brahma active when I think of myself, which means all of my actions, all of my thoughts, all of my words toward myself are going to be based in and cued to love, keyed to love. And if I don't, there's my next worksheet. In order to access the hidden part of my mind that plays out there in that languaging and that treatment of self. It's kind of fun. Go ahead.
The self, is that's the a portion I had overlooked. That's got to be first, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Rachma, for the creator, for neighbor, and for self. For upon this hangs the law and all of its prophets. In other words, if you pick up that book and you haven't worked out a particular issue and you read a passage that, let's say, resonates one of your rage issues, then when you go and explain that to the rest of your church, you're going to be in rage. And you'll convince them that, this one's, you see, this passage about the creator, the creator really was raging here, you see. He was ready to kill everybody. The blame God, the blame game. If the words aren't keyed to love, they're not human. And the power of life and death is in our words. The worksheet process is designed to give us access to everything in the unconscious, which means all the way back to all of our generational issues and clean them up. So remind me what the situation is you're working on in number one.
Number one, I started with a situation with George. George was changing the landscape right across from where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And my thought was, it's causing my unhappiness because beauty's destroyed. And we went on to talk about vengeance or the punishment, which I didn't understand at the time. I'm having a little better grasp.
Awesome.
How this is controlling him.
Controlling him or controlling you?
Or both.
Or both.
I'm wondering, but that is the basic where I started.
So your goal was?
That's what we're talking about now, number three.
Yep. So we want you to identify in that situation with George and what you perceive as the destruction of property or beauty. What's the goal? What is it you want from him?
That's a really good question.
Yeah. Most of the time when we confront ourselves, a lot of times it's generational and it's unconscious. I mean, there could be a wide variety of things. It might be something as simple as the starting point is, you know, here's this guy destroying beauty. I want him to be reasonable. It might be I want him to preserve beauty. It might be I want him to honor my wishes. It might be I want him to come and talk to me before he does it. It might be he should talk to the property owner first. There could be a wide range of things. It might be he should just cooperate with me. It might be he should know even without me asking. You know, there could be any number of goals that are involved in that situation.
Yeah.
So, and you may do several different worksheets, you know, with goals similar to that or whatever is at the root of what's happening for you. So what at this moment would you fill that blank in with?
At this moment, I believe as a start would be my goal would be that I would have liked him to preserve as much of the nature as he could without just knocking it all down and changing
okay,
everything so dramatically.
So there's the part you don't want. You want to make sure, and if you read the language in number 3, the constructive result. My desire, the constructive result, the exact goal that I hold that drives my pain perception is that, number 1C, George, would maintain the beauty of the property he's working on. It sounds like that would be it for starters.
Okay. I would agree with that.
And as you do that, what's happening with your breath? Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
As you write that.
Got it.
Are you breathing?
And now.
Now.
I think I was holding there for sure.
Yeah. What people will say is, well, you know, I was just thinking about it. That's why I was holding my breath. Here's my explanation of what it means when people say, I was just thinking. It means that, well, first of all, the whole body-mind system, every cell in the structure is a brain cell. It's designed to store information. And there's information stored throughout the structure. The mind operates through every cell in what we call the body. I have approved of and labeled safe everything that's going in from my neck up. The information that's stored there. But when something that I have not approved of that's stored below my neck, down somewhere in my body, starts to resonate, I shut my breath down so I don't have to access that or look at it, and I stay in the safe part of the biocomputer. And that's why at the end of the sentence where you identify the constructive result is the reminder to breathe. Because when you shut your breath down, you restrict access to unconscious data and information.
And
when you breathe,
we don't. Mm-hmm.
It's a habit that's been going on for generations. No, we don't look at that. We don't deal with that sort of stuff. It starts so early. I mean, you know, one of my favorite examples is you think, you know, and we live in a culture that to a great degree is in a continuous lie. And, you know, imagine we've got Mrs. Jones who's standing across the fence standing across the fence from Mrs. Jones talking, the next door neighbor. And, you know, here I am 3 and I'm standing beside the fence and watching mom and this neighbor have a conversation. And all of a sudden, Mr. Jones comes out and gives his wife a peck on the cheek and heads off to work. And I speak up and look at Mr. Jones. I'm living in the world of energy. I can see exactly what's going on energetically between Mr. and Mrs. Jones. And I say, gee, Mr. Jones, why do you hate your wife so much? Mom turns around with a smash in the head, a slap in the head, said, don't you ever say anything like that again. What did we just teach that kid to do? Lie? The kid will probably never be disciplined. Our culture uses the word discipline to represent the idea of being properly beat up, but it actually comes from the word disciple, which means properly taught. Mom, if she were going to properly teach that child, would teach the child, you know, there are things in our culture, and you're learning about it, that are just not socially acceptable. And so what's going on in other people's relationships, even if we can see it, it's not necessarily our place to speak it. So we, you know, keep some of those things to ourselves, and we don't speak about it unless appropriate. So the child is now disciplined, being properly taught, instead of a whack in the head and punished for what we don't do. And so all of those nuances need to be undone in the mind. And when I write a goal that's resonating pain perception, tend to hold my breath to lock down whatever aspect of that, whatever it's about. to keep it locked down in the part of the biocomputer that I'm used to keeping closed. And the show's going to cut us off in a minute or so. We'll just go to a completes and let go of the outro. So does that fit and make sense?
Yes, we'll continue with that tomorrow, the breath. And
all right.
And appreciate
so the next,
everything.
Delighted. The next step is going to be to get into now bringing forward active present love so that when I cancel the goal, there's going to be love resonating in me, moving in me to dissolve what I uncover when I forgive. So we'll look forward to doing